Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, fellow star beings. I am Hercules Invictus of the Olympian Arcanate. Welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods, an ongoing exploration to better understand, interact with, and attune ourselves to the benevolent creative powers that shaped us in the dawn of time and guide us still. Tonight, I'm proud to introduce the Worldwide Religion of Love with Michael and Diane Duncan. I will be occasionally participating in this discussion. And now, welcome, Michael and Diane. I'm grateful that you're here.
Thank you very much, Hercules. We are so delighted to be here to share a little bit of the Worldwide Religion of Love brought to us by Gabriel and Aphrodite under the auspices of the local universe father Zeus and the local universe mother Hera. And Hercules, we're so glad that you'll be joining in with this program.
I'm greatly honored as well. Thank you.
Well, we have a wonderful show to present tonight. We are the Worldwide Religion of Love. We are the advocates for this new type of religion, so to speak. It is a personal religion. It's not necessarily a religion that someone has to adhere to as far as doctrine, as far as practice, as far as ritual. It is something that the celestials, the space gods, are offering to humanity at this time in humanity's development, called the New Worldwide Religion of Love, where they will be helping humanity give them a little bit of an evolutionary boost, so to speak, appealing to the mind with divine truth through Gabriel and appealing to the heart through divine love from Aphrodite, the New Worldwide Religion of Love. And we have some guests with us that are contributing to this new worldwide religion, this new celestial and human movement. We have some wonderful guests tonight. We have our wonderful friend from New York, Nick Curto, who will be offering some thoughts about truth and about higher celestial beings who are beneficently shedding their light upon us and helping us. We also have our wonderful son, Alexander, who's here to chat with Hercules about a certain manifestation of space gods, Doctor Who. And, of course, we have our wonderful friend, Gerald T. Farley, who will be offering everything he has to offer to expand our minds and to help us to tune in to this new love, this new truth. And we also have, of course, my beautiful wife, Diane, and she also will be talking about truth and about Gabriel. So without further ado, let us get into our wonderful discussion and our wonderful program with our great friend who is past president of Urantia Book Society of Greater New York. And he's also the founder of Disclosure Network, our wonderful friend, Nick Curto. Welcome, Nick.
Oh, thank you very much, Michael. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Thank you.
Nick, we were talking about earlier something about truth and how important that was, especially today. And I love the comments that you made about it.
Thank you, Diane. Truth has to be so important for each one of our lives, because without truth, we are in a very, very difficult, dangerous area where we don't know what is true, what's not true, what is good for us, what is very much not good. And you have to always run that past you. Every single thing I think that you hear and see, and kind of register that, is that really ringing truth to you or not? And if it's not, you then need to question that and dig deeply of what is wrong with what's going on. And that goes into just every facet of your life on this planet, your social, your love interests, religious, your spiritual insights. I remember when I first heard the first words of the Urantia book in a Unitarian church many, many years ago when they were reading from the Urantia book, and it stirred me. It absolutely did. I was hearing what I couldn't believe was this amazing book, that was filled with truth and love, and it was undeniable. It was thrilling. And it was just unquestionably what I was looking for. And it was just immediate. And I've never felt for a second that that wasn't the most important, one of the most important moments of my life, because I was hearing something that I was always looking for and hopefully wanted to find. And, you know, I think everybody, Diane, has that that feeling. When something is going on, either you're listening to it or you're speaking, there's something that goes on that gives you a feeling that, yes, this is the right thing, this is the truth, or something is wrong here. Something needs to be looked at because it's not gelling. Don't you feel that in your life, that there's certain things that all of a sudden the alarm bell goes off?
Well, when you said truth and love, you know, that's our whole being now, because the worldwide religion of love, that's what it is, truth and love. Gabriel is the facilitator of truth in the Urantia book, and Venus, she is the goddess of love. And so, you know, that's where it is, and that's where we're going. It's a process, but that's where we're going.
Yeah, it's to the heart. It's to the heart. Infusing the divine into the heart and infusing the mind with the divine truth.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wanted to bring up the subject of the seraphic guardian, the guardian angel that we have, because don't you feel that there are times when there's this little voice kind of speaking to you and guiding you? Do you ever feel that?
Oh, absolutely. That happens to me all the time. But I'm trying to get people to understand that they can recognize that that really is a divine intervention. And that's the hard part. So many people say, well, maybe it's just my mind talking to me. I'm trying to get them to understand that there really is a celestial right there with them all the time. And whether you want to call it a guardian angel or with me, I have a lot of friends, that are around me. But the thing is, what they are conveying is really the truth. And boy, I tell you, I'm really following them. But I need to learn how to help others to be able to recognize which one of them and what they are saying, whether it's really the truth or not.
I think you have to listen to that carefully. And you can also develop that. You can develop that quality of listening and getting some sort of a direction of, is this correct or should I be heading in a different direction? Is this not good for me? Is this not right that I'm doing something or thinking something that really has a lot of negativity to it? And there are times when you really do feel as though you're not alone. Well, you are with a guardian angel, a seraphic guardian, who is really there, and they are your beloved friend, and they will guide you and help you away from lies, away from danger at points. And it's some people call it intuition, and that's okay. That's okay too, because we can develop intuition also. But the truth has to be just paramount. It has to be what we are always seeking. And if you're feeling as though something is not right, chances are it's not. And you have to look more deeply and investigate what is really going on here. And that can go anywhere from political, from politics, to relationships. It can go into so many different areas. And if you don't seek the truth, if you really are just kind of just meandering along, you will start getting delayed. You'll start taking wrong roads, and one wrong road will lead to another wrong road, and before that, too long, you're going to be lost. You're going to be lost. And by the same token, following the truth will lead you to another road of truth, and so forth. And that's where you want to stay. Stay on that road at all costs.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right, Nick. And you said the magic word for me. The word was develop. I think that the process of getting to know the Celestials, getting to know what they have to say, developing a dialogue with them is something that you have to exercise. It's not something that just automatically falls out of the sky. I mean, I'm sure it does, though, you know, in like crucial situations. I'm sure something like that does happen. But it's something to develop, and that's one aspect of the light and life lifestyle that goes hand in hand with the new worldwide religion of love. How to become a Christ in the 21st century is developing that ability to really tune in to what they're saying and the way they want you to live. Very important aspect. And one thing that Lord Maitreya said to us, he said, tell the people to set up a chapel in their homes. A chapel to the local universe Father, local universe Mother, Gabriel and Aphrodite, to start doing that process, learning that process, and developing those abilities. You know,
it's called the Chapel of Tomorrow.
Yeah, ours
that
is.
That was what they wanted us to call it, and for anyone that would like to, but they can name it, of course, whatever they wish. But even if you have a question during the day, you can just go right in there, you know, if you're home or if you're able to, and talk to them and find out what to do. I mean, I had a situation today where I had to make a decision. A friend had called on the phone, and I unfortunately didn't ask first, and I said, oh, sure, you know, that's a great idea, I'll do that. And then after I got off the phone, they said, no, you this isn't going to work out, you know, and you've got to call back and say no. And so I did when I realized what was going on, and they gave me the example of what could happen. Then I said, oh, well, you know, I really thank you for giving me that. And so I called back and then changed my decision. So sometimes you can't just, you know, get it the very moment. Sometimes after you make a decision, you have to change it if they bring in reasons that it's not right. So that happened to me today.
Well, absolutely true, Diane. And another part of that is that the idea that you can ask for help. A lot of people really don't understand that you can ask the Universal Father, God, whatever you want to call the first source and center, and ask for help. That they create the dialogue that you can do that, and you can be in a temple, a church, a holy place, or not. You could be anywhere really, and if the issue comes up and you need help, ask for it respectfully, just say, I really do need help here, and I'm asking for help. And I'll tell you, when you do that, you feel that you do get advice, and it will change your decision, perhaps. It will help you to make a clear decision of what's correct. And asking for help is something I think we need to do more of. Dialogue, like you're saying.
Right. Also, I might mention, too, and this has only been happening in the last year, but when they give you some orders, and I'm telling you, sometimes they give us orders, they mean it. And, like, you know, they want me to really meditate more. to just simply take a block of time and meditate more. And, you know, sometimes when I get ingrained in doing things and I don't do that, then all of a sudden these lights come on. And I'm telling you, that scares the dickens out of you. It really does. They are saying, you do, you know, these new processes because they will help you. They will help you. And they really make me get in line, so to speak. And, you know, they want me to meditate for a certain period of time. They want me to rest a certain period of time, study and so forth. And just within the last year or two, they're very strong about it, getting their mm-hmm. orders followed.
Hey, Nick.
Well, it's good advice. That is excellent advice. And I think that we all need to do more, including myself. We need to do more of that quiet time. And, you know, we all are so busy now. There's so many distractions every single hour of every day. There's so many things you have to do. You have to be there. You have to do this and that. The time is ticking. And we can get so busy that we mm-hmm. don't do the meditation that we should. And you need to do that to get the big picture and take that moment to really relax and ask for help and to meditate, and that always is a good idea. I think so.
Yeah, and you're saying you're talking about the seraphic guardians, the guardian angels. So we can get in touch with them, can't we?
Absolutely can, and they are with us. They're not a distance away. They are with us, and they have kind of signed up for the total run, so to speak. They're not going to abandon us. They are there, and they are there to help us. They say whisper in your ear would be kind of an example of just something that you're getting a message and. Listen to it and see if that makes sense to you, and trust that. And if there's something that doesn't make sense, you really have to then go deep into it. What is wrong with this? And do I need more information to make a wise decision? And you want to not be detoured. You want to be on the right track as much as possible. And that meditation will help you to do that. You know, it's so funny that I've gotten just one final thing in that sometimes I have dreams and sometimes they're quite vivid. And a lot of times it is I'm somewhere in a city or a place that I've never been before and I'm trying to get to a destination. Mm-hmm. And some of my dreams are like that. And it's like trying to find out how to get to the place I need to get to. And mm-hmm. and to look for signs or to try different roads, so to speak. And that's a recurring dream. Mm-hmm. And I think that, in a sense, we're all trying to get where we need to go. And we need all the help we can to achieve that.
I totally agree with that, Nick. And, you know, that's what the new worldwide religion is all about, is getting in touch with the new direction that they're trying to head us in. Nick, we thank you so much. Oh, and I wanted to mention one other thing, too, about truth is, you know, our studies, our spiritual studies, the Urantia book and other studies can also lead us to deeper truths. And, Nick, we really appreciate that you are a real proponent of the Urantia book, and you have your own show, and you have wonderful guests on. Just recently, I guess you had Paula Thompson on, or you're having Paula Thompson on, aren't you?
Actually, Paula is coming up Saturday night at, Paula Thompson, who just had, who just left the position for so many years as the executive director of the fellowship, and they had a wonderful Zoom party. I visited that Zoom party, and the screen was filled. It's a Zoom party. It was filled with people wishing Paula the very best. She's been an amazing, amazing tool for understanding of the Urantia book, and she's just now starting to retire, and she's going to be on my show. I'm very excited about that.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you so much, Nick, for that. And
pleasure.
We will Thank you so much, sir. And now we're going to go on to Hercules and Alex are going to talk about the space gods in another capacity with Doctor Who. So are you there, Hercules?
I am here, and I'm listening, and I'm looking forward to what Alexander has to share.
All right. Well, he's here, and Hercules and Alex, did you have something to say, Alex, to Hercules?
Hello?
Hello. How are you, Alexander?
I'm fine.
So what is new and exciting in the Hooniverse?
Well, I got two serials that were... that had to be legitimately animated because most of it was lost. Because did you know that a lot of the early episodes of Doctor Who are actually, like, non-existent, pretty much?
Yes, I know that they were lost because the BBC recorded over the old shows, but some of them exist in audio form, and they're being released... in audio form.
Yeah, I actually have two DVDs where they animated the lost episodes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They're both of the second Doctor's run. Patrick Troughton.
Well, that is incredible. I'm glad that they're animating them. Are they eventually going to animate all of them?
No. They've animated a great deal of them. But the problem is that they're running out of money for the project and they might abandon it.
Now, I heard that there was a mega crossover with all the Doctors in the Doctor Hooniverse and that books were coming out and comic books and audio books that tie the whole universe together. Have they moved forward with that?
I don't think I've gotten that.
Okay.
When are they doing that, Hercules?
They were supposed to be doing it now. I think a couple of them had come out already. I know the comic books had come out, but they were also planning novels and they were planning audio. They have like an adventure that spans the entire Doctor Hooniverse with all the different Doctors in it, in the story. It looked pretty exciting.
Oh, wow. What's the platform for all the Doctor for the latter?
I don't really remember. It was a while ago that I learned about it, but I know that a few of them had come out because I'd seen them listed on social media, and also when I go to comic book stores, I've seen like a few of the comic book covers. So I know that it started. I don't know if I have the time to follow it, but it sounded very exciting.
That's awesome.
Anyway, the names of the episodes I got, or the serials, are The Faceless Ones and The Whoop of Fear.
Tell me about them.
Which one would you like to hear about first?
You pick and choose. You read them, so you're the best judge of what you should share first.
All right. I actually watched them.
Oh, you watched them. Okay.
So The Faceless Ones basically is about the Doctor and his companions at the time land at an airport and figure out that there are mysterious disappearances of the youths in the airport. And it's all connected to a particular mysterious chameleon tours. And the Doctor has to unravel that. But you can probably already tell where that's going.
Why don't you enlighten me?
I mean, naturally, the chameleon tour people are aliens. Naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just miniaturizing people to replace their race, you know?
Uh-huh.
So they can take over Earth.
The
what's funny about
What's that?
What's funny about the Faceless Ones is that there are surviving episodes, but it's only 1 and 3. But they animated the whole thing, including the ones that are not lost. Which I find pretty hilarious.
It is very interesting. How did they make the decision what to animate and what not to animate? Did they start with one doctor and then go to the other doctor, or did they just jump around and animate different episodes from the different doctors?
They kind of just jump around, as far as I know. But I will also mention that when they animated the episodes that actually did survive, they did not do a very good job at making it faithful to what you'd actually be watching in live action.
Okay.
Like, I know that there are limitations in animation, but for God's sake, you could at least, like, animate over the live action footage you have.
If I remember correctly, they found a lot of this footage in other countries from where the BBC had sent Doctor Who when it went into like syndication, and
yeah.
That's how they found a lot of the lost footage, and some of it was just audio tracks and some of it was some video. Some of the video had been corroded, but I think it's very good that they've been trying to recreate it at least, and I'm saddened to hear they ran out of money.
Yeah. The Web of Fear is about is essentially, they make an unscheduled landing in the New York subway tunnels and have to go up against the Yeti. If you've never heard of the Great Intelligence and all that.
Well, tell our listeners about the Great Intelligence.
Intelligence is a classic Doctor Who villain that made his appearance in some of the modern Doctor Who episodes. Most notably,
okay.
The Snowmen. Basically, the Great Intelligence is a shapeless, formless being that is basically the universe's collective knowledge. And he wants to take the Doctor's mind, so it has more knowledge.
And so does it do this to all beings in the universe, the universal mind, collective knowledge?
Kind of, yes. It's more of a natural force than it is really a evil force.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's unusual to have universal intelligence be the villain.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
I mean, in the modern Doctor Who things, he's a more fitting villain. Or it's a more fitting villain, because rather than being like, I'm going to send my Yeti after you, it's more like cleverly creating false realities and all that.
Uh-huh.
Which I personally prefer in The Great Intelligence.
Well, it sounds like you're having a wonderful time exploring Doctor Who's universe, and I know that you have a lot of background in mythical, mystical, and metaphysical systems, so you've drawn parallels in the past. What do you find the most fascinating about exploring the Doctor Who universe?
Can't really say. I mean, everything's pretty much that much interesting.
Go ahead.
You know what I will say that's very interesting, because Alex, of course, turned Diane and I onto Doctor Who, and we just love it, you know. Especially the '80s Doctors, you know, because they brought in some really amazing special effects, you know, in the '80s and such. I mean, but there's a charm. '80s and '90s. There's a charm to 2000s. Okay, there's a charm to the older ones, but I really like the, you know, the special effects. But the interesting thing is that the Doctor, there are episodes where they portray him to be a Christ-like character, you know.
Yeah.
He has these you know, infinite powers to, and he always seems to, you know, we talk about the space gods Hercules with the new worldwide religion and other pursuits, other spiritual pursuits that we're all expressing. And it's interesting that the doctor always seems to focus on the earth, to try to save the earth, to come to the earth
yes.
and help the earth people, you know. So he's kind of like a savior of sorts, kind of like a Christ, a God that intervenes to, you know, to help us. I think that's kind of an interesting thing that I've noticed.
Yes, it is very interesting. And he does have connections, or she has connections.
Yes. You got it. Yes.
But there are connections to the earth, and he or she seems to love the earth in some way and feel responsible for the earth as well.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, I do actually want to shed some light on why he always lands on Earth.
Okay.
I mean, as you probably know, he has no control of what the TARDIS does. So, essentially, he comments in The Web of Fear, "Isn't it curious that we keep landing on your Earth?"
So he doesn't know what draws him to the Earth. Maybe the TARDIS has some divine purpose then.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that sort of situation. I also wanted to mention, I actually had a theory about the doctor's real name.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
It's Germaine.
How did you get that?
If you really think about it for a minute, Saint Germain. The doctor could be Saint Germain, because Saint Germain seemed to be pretty much everything the doctor is, except the doctor is more of a fictionalized version of it.
Well,
you could be right. That's a very good analogy, and it's something worth contemplating. I'm going to meditate on that later.
And plus, I looked in a book about the thing about Germaine. It can be used for both genders, and secondly, too, the first sentence I saw is, "For Germaine, all roads lead to home," and I think to myself, oh, God, I think I figured out his real name.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a surprising amount of sense. Another thing, too, is once you find out his real name possibly could be Germaine, you start looking at the doctors and you start noticing that they all kind of look like a Germaine, if you know what I mean.
Why don't you write about that, Alexander? That's an excellent theory, and I'm sure other people would enjoy reading about it.
Yeah, I think it would be, too. I think that'd be kind of neat.
I have put it out before, and everyone just shoots it down and says, no, no way. No way.
Well, not us.
Look, everything you say will have naysayers. You know, you could expect that, but it's a good theory, and
yes.
you're gathering evidence to support it, and if they don't want to consider it, that's fine, but you're putting it out there.
Yeah, I did want to also mention this, too.
Yeah, thank you for that, Hercules. That's great.
I did also want to mention that I did figure out that Doctor Who is based off of the exploits of Saint Germain.
How so?
I literally looked up his Doctor Who based off of Saint Germain, and it happened to say, yes, it is. The original creators were intending upon that. That's literally the inspiration behind it all.
So there you go.
Yeah. So why wouldn't the doctor's name be Germaine?
There you go. That makes lots of sense. And it was their intention to have him represent Saint Germain. There you go. You got the proof you needed.
Hey, is there a particular site, Alex, that you went to that talked about that?
No. I just looked it up on Google and my answers just show up.
Interesting. Well, Hercules, thank you so much for spending some time here with Alex.
Enjoyed it a lot.
Are there any final thoughts you have, Alex, before we move on to Diane?
You're probably wondering who my favorite doctor is.
Okay.
I have to say it's the second. Patrick
Why the
Troughton.
Second?
Patrick Troughton.
Yeah, he has a certain yell he does. That just gets me every time I listen to it.
That's awesome.
Because if you watch any of his episodes, you're likely to hear that yell at some point, especially in the end of the first episode of The Web of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such an amusing yell.
All right. Okay, well, Hercules.
Kendra.
Yeah, thank you, Hercules, and we're going to appreciate that. We're going to talk to Diane here because we have tonight a focus on truth, the truth that can be obtained through our relationships, our human relationships, with our relationships with our celestial brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers. Truth is so important, as Nick mentioned in his presentation tonight. So Diane is going to tell us about a very special person, a very special entity, happens to be the firstborn son, firstborn progeny of the local universe father and local universe mother, local universe father equating to the god Zeus, and Hera is the local universe mother. Their firstborn is Gabriel, and we have, through our studies and through our inspiration, come to understand Gabriel as Hephaestus. So, Diane, tell us about the truth of Gabriel and Gabriel's truth.
Well, I wanted to talk about this relationship that we have had with Gabriel and Aphrodite, too, of course, and now evolving into the worldwide religion of love. Gabriel, he and his consort Venus, or Aphrodite in the Greek, they're sponsoring this worldwide religion of love, which began for Michael and I March the 20th, 2020. And if everybody remembers, that was a big week for the whole world. A lot of things happened that week. Gabriel is the facilitator of truth. And that even says in the Urantia book, you know. And Venus, of course, we think of her, everyone thinks of her as the expression of love. Now, Gabriel has developed a relationship for a long time with us. And he has told us various things, but just recently he's told us that he incarnated as Socrates in the Greek period of time. Well, this was very interesting because we had never, you know, thought about him personalizing like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. Our relationship began with Gabriel in 1985. I would meditate at night, and like I was telling you earlier, if I don't meditate, they bring these lights on me and get me right over there and get me quiet. But I was meditating in 1985 when all of a sudden a gentleman appeared. He was about 10 inches tall, and he had on a Greek costume. And this is something that I think it took me 85, 95, 2000, oh, at least 20 years before I even thought about why did he wear a Greek chiton, you know, a Greek costume and Greek sandals, and he was middle-aged. Well, during this time when he would come and visit me, and he came for 4 years as a gentleman with the name of Mark II, but he looked Greek. And so, I don't know, for some reason, and I never connected it at the time, but I do now, I have a bust of Socrates that I ordered from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And I put it up by my bed, and I've had that by my bed for a long, long time,
yes.
At least, what, 15, 20 years?
Well, yeah, even longer
at
than
least,
that.
Yeah. And I always thought that he looked like Mark II. But I never really put it together. But now, after all these years, I realize that Mark II was indeed Socrates and Gabriel. And that's the thing that he has told us, that he does incarnate, he does personalize. And he came to me as Mark II for many years, and just recently we found out that he was Socrates. Now, I wanted to just mention just a few minutes about Socrates, because we're talking about truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Socrates was born, and I looked this up today, in 469 B.C. until 399 B.C., or about, you know, we never can be absolutely sure. So that's about 70 years on the life. Socrates was a sculptor. I didn't know that. I looked that up. He was an artist, and his father was too. And another important fact that I found out was the oracle at Delphi pronounced that the wisest man in all of Greece was Socrates. They say that he became convinced that his calling was to search for wisdom about right conduct, by which he might guide the intellectual moral improvement of the races and the world. He spent his time discussing virtue, justice, and piety, and he put out a new method of approaching knowledge, a conception of the soul. So I think this right here is very important, adding the soul as the seat of both normal working consciousness and of moral character. And he also put out to the world a sense that the universe was mind-ordered. And that's what the Urantia book does.
Yes.
The universe is mind-oriented. And I thought that was very important. I just wanted to mention also that his doctrine of the soul led him to the belief that all virtues converge into one, which is good. Socrates held that virtue and knowledge are identical. And he chose death rather than exile to show people how important that truth is. I mean, here it is 2,000 years later, more than that, and yet Michael and I are sitting here knowing about him, that Socrates showed the world how important truth was. And I think this is important today. And I think maybe that's why that we are working so hard with the Worldwide Religion of Love, because Gabriel is bringing us the idea that we have to find this truth within ourselves, that we can't look for it in the outside, not our media, not even in the old books, because they've been changed too. So my message tonight is to, again, go within. I know that they get after me for not meditating more, and I have to do that. But other people need to do that, too, to find the real truth, because the real truth is only from the gods. It's not going to be from any people around you, unless it's Gabriel incarnating. So that was my message for tonight, and I thank everyone for listening. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to transition into, I just wanted to make a segue to our next guest, to introduce our next guest. And you touched on something, Diane, that Socrates was trying to drive home. He was trying to drive home the cosmic lifestyle.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
The cosmic lifestyle. And I think Gerald, of course, embodies this cosmic lifestyle. He's been a guest at our home many, many times, in our home in Mission Viejo, California, driving, of course, in his slick red Tesla down
to...
Yes.
It is so beautiful, and, oh, it drives like a dream, right, Michael?
Oh, yeah.
Let me drive it.
It's fantastic. But this...
Her name is Beloved. Don't forget her
beloved.
Name.
That's right.
Beloved.
We love Beloved.
So we also, as everyone here, is trying to introduce to humanity this cosmic lifestyle in our own way. And Gerald, of course, has mastered the cosmic lifestyle. He has shared with us and helped us to grow so much in our lifestyle.
Yeah.
And one of the aspects, or one of... probably the main aspect for humanity with the new worldwide religion of love is the light and life lifestyle, becoming a Christ in the 21st century, taking what they're giving us today to transform ourselves, and in doing so, through the personal religion, personal pursuit, transforming the world. So, Gerald, You are a wonderful friend of ours, and we thank you so much for everything you have to share with us. So please share with the listeners what you have to present today.
Thank you, Michael. One of the things that really impressed me is that there's a connecting link, a thread that I've seen with what Nick presented around truth and especially the Destiny Guardian Seraphim or Guardian Angels, Seraphic Guardian. And boy, when Alex mentioned Saint Germain being Doctor Who, bam, I got the big bang. You know, like, wow, that's right on. And the same thing came, and Diane and I had a conversation about it earlier, around Socrates and Gabriel. That makes perfect sense. It's beautiful. And what I want to share really goes back to Greece 2,300 years ago, and it's a little bit about Stoicism, which is kind of a mystery to a lot of people these days, because it's not really looked at. Hopefully this will give a better idea of what's going on, at least from this perspective, on Stoicism. Instead of feeling angry and numbed by the state of the world, what if we asked ourselves, how can we be the best person we can possibly be, despite what is now taking place around us? And that's huge, because with what's taking place around us, few of us take the time to really contemplate on that and to stay in the present moment long enough to do it well. So if everyone followed that guide, just imagine the world we would actually have. Despite the popular connotation of Stoic being unemotional, Stoicism is actually an incredibly optimistic methodology, a practical guide to becoming active in creating the world we want to live in. Stoicism, which was founded in Greece approximately 2,300 years ago, concerns itself with what is called eudaimonia. It's eudaimonia, the achievement of human flourishing and the minimization of suffering. Eudaimonia arises through living an ethical life, one in accordance with nature and practicing the virtues of wisdom, justice, courage, moderation, and everything else that we, all three of us, all four of us actually, including Hercules, you know, have touched on tonight. Some of the main ideas are cultivate greater contentment and gratitude, better understand the nature of wisdom, find truth rather than worry about being right, foster productive dialogue between people, feel more fully present and alive in every moment, and that's by being in the present, incorporate ancient philosophy into modern day life. There's a lot that the ancients had that we're not making ourselves aware of, I think, enough. And that's why I love being part of this group, that's what's happening. Everybody is looking at the wisdom that's really there. Mm-hmm. And there are just a few little excerpts, one from Seneca, very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within yourself and your way of thinking. We suffer more often in imagination than in reality. Seneca. Mm. And this one from Marcus Aurelius,
yes,
Roman philosopher. Today, I escaped anxiety, or actually, I discarded it. I love that.
Mm.
Because it was within me,
mm-hmm,
in my own perceptions,
mm-hmm,
not outside. And that is absolutely right on,
mm-hmm,
as far as Jesus' teachings are concerned.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marcus. And the last from Epictetus, do not explain your philosophy. Embody it. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful.
Beautiful.
Wonderful. Thank you, Gerald. That was most beautiful. It sounds like the Greek is really coming through. Hercules, do you have a favorite philosopher or Greek philosopher or anything like that?
I like them all. Just to add to what had brought up and Gerald had brought up, Socrates was considered the wisest of the philosophers because he knew that he knew nothing.
Ah, yes.
He was aware of the extent of his own ignorance. And also Marcus Aurelius, in addition to being a philosopher, was also an emperor. So he had the highest position you can have in the Roman Empire, and yet he was a Stoic philosopher. And the sayings that we have from Marcus Aurelius were from his journal. Stoics are encouraged to journal their thoughts. So all those wonderful quotes we have are from his private journal.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, okay.
It's good reading. Thank you, Hercules.
Yeah.
Yes, that is good to hear. Okay.
So Gerald, do you have anything else to offer us that you have prepared for the evening?
No, but if there's a couple of minutes, just to expand on that, on the truth that Nick's so eloquently put before us, the idea of truth, looking at the Urantia seven adjutant mind spirits, intuition prompts us, understanding guides our step toward the assimilation of truth. Knowledge becomes a personal asset. Courage makes us operational. Counsel assists us with brain, heart, mind, consciousness, and soul storming. Wisdom is the resulting spiritual royal jelly. I love that. Worship is the irrepressible climax of this revelatory process. By then, our spiritual eyes are wide open and we no longer operate on blind faith. From this perspective, we can see that faith is a crucial driving force in our quest for reliable and enlightening truth. Thank you both, Nick and Diane, for bringing truth to us tonight.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much, Gerald.
I just wanted to bring one more celestial into this since we have a few minutes. And that was Dionysus. And Dionysus has also told me personally that he has actually incarnated. And I don't know if you guys have heard of Diogenes.
Yes, the Oyenius.
Yes. Yes. Diogenes. Well, Dionysus is the god of wine. And also, I consider him a Christ of the Greeks. That's how I consider him. He's called Laniforge in the Urantia book. And he's also called the planetary sovereign of our planet in the Arantia book, they talk about the planetary sovereign, and that is Dionysus as Laniforge. In the Oriental world, Dionysus tells Michael and me that he is Gautama Buddha. Now, this is interesting because in the Greek, he's a Greek god, Dionysus, but he's saying that he is also a Buddha, Gautama. He is over Maitreya, the fifth Buddha of our earth. So Gautama is the fourth. Dionysus, as Diogenes, was a truth seeker and was Gabriel, as Gabriel was, as Socrates. Both lived their lives to teach the value of truth in the world. So I just wanted to bring about another celestial that is also incarnated as a Greek philosopher. Mm-hmm. And I just thought I would bring that in before we left this evening, that there are many of the gods that have incarnated, and we're just finding out who they are and what they were doing during those times, and that they are now blessing us still with their messages through our writings and their writings and our reading and studying. So thank you for letting me share that little last bit about Dionysus.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Diane.
Mm-hmm. Most welcome. I didn't think I'd have time to do that, but I just thought I would include him.
Yeah, and Diogenes was interested in sharing his lifestyle approach mm-hmm. of simplicity, of morality and ethics in a simple approach.
Yes.
Not too ostentatious.
Right. They said that he lived his life in a tub.
Yes.
And when he saw
a jar,
someone,
right? A
well,
jar.
It was like, you know, in the olden days they had those big jugs that were so big, you know. And that he also gave up his only utensil, a cup, when he saw a man just getting a glass of water from his hand, you know, some water from his hand. He threw away his cup. So the simple life truly was his motto.
Yeah.
Almost seems like there's a connection with St. Francis of Assisi and
oh,
the poor
yes.
clerk.
Oh, yes.
Yes, in that's the 12th
right.
century. Uh-huh.
Well, Diane and I believe in the simple lifestyle, but we also love some of the wonderful advantages of modern living also, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
We have a nice comfortable home here in Southern California. But we do love that the gods are visiting us, and we're told that some of us are even living here and working out of our home here. And we would hope that everyone, like Maitreya says, like Maitreya suggests, that everyone set up a temple in their home to welcome the gods, to learn how to talk with the gods, and develop that ability to really find the truth from them and live that truth. And I think we have some personal information we need to get from everybody. So, Nick, can you go first? And please let us know how people can get in contact with you. And please tell them when your next show is with Paula.
Yes, Paula.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael. Yeah, it's to reach me with a comment or a question, I would welcome that. And you can do that by my email, and I'm going to give you that right now. It is nicknyny1, and it's the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one, @gmail.com. Again, nicknyny1@gmail.com. My Paula Thompson very special podcast is this coming Saturday night. It will start at 9 o'clock, that's Eastern time, and Paula's going to give a review of her amazing leadership of the fellowship and also talk a little bit about what she feels would be coming in the near future, and I can't wait to talk to her. She is an amazing, amazing woman, and I think she represents the fellowship so well. And anyhow, so I'm looking forward to that. Also, Disclosure Network New York, Disclosure Network New York, and that is a group now going on the 21st year. Our website is dnny.info, dnny.info. Thank you, Michael and Diane.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. And
Thank you.
And you, Gerald, can you give us your contact information in case anyone wants to touch base with you?
Gerald T. Farley at hotmail.com. Area 503-385-8480. Thank you all. Love you all.
Thank you. Love you too, Gerald. And Hercules, your Facebook?
Facebook's the best way to reach me right now. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And we have a YouTube channel. It's called Michael and Diane Duncan. That's Michael and two N's for Diane and D-U-N-K-I-N for Duncan. Michael and Diane Duncan. We have lots of videos up there about the celestials and the new worldwide religion of love, of course. And our email address is michaelduncan1@hotmail.com. Thank you so much, Hercules, for this opportunity. We thank our wonderful guests. And God bless the world with lots of truth and lots of love.
And on that note, we have to close. We've run out of time. Thank you very much. Take care, everybody. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Thank you all. God bless you.
Good night. Much love.
Good night.